I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. Well, I'm really happy today. I have someone I've just been wanting to talk to for a long time. It's Julia Torres. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm so happy I finally get to talk to you. I met you, was it last year?
I think it was earlier. I don't even remember, Barbara. It feels like forever. I feel like we've just known each other forever. Let's just say that.
Oh, I know. I love the picture of us, and I'm going to put that up on our, we make a blog, and it's going to be really fun. But thank you so much for being here. Now, what I usually do is I like to tell everyone a little bit about you. And so they kind of get to know before we start talking about some other things, okay?
That sounds great.
All right. And if I have it wrong, you just jump in.
Okay. Will do.
So this is Julia Torres. She's a teacher librarian, and she was a language arts teacher. Are you still a language arts teacher?
I am. I'm a language arts teacher librarian.
Oh, wow. That's actually a good mix. I like that. And you're at a public high school in Denver or
yes.
Outside of Denver?
Yes, we are technically still in Denver. So the address is Denver, but we are in a region called the Far Northeast in Denver Public Schools.
Okay, because I wasn't really sure. But I know that one thing, you do a lot of writing, you do a lot of publishing, you're on medium.com. You do it because you want your students to read what you write. Is that right?
I do. I write primarily for myself, of course, but I write for them because I want them to know that this thing we call writing, it can take so many forms and it's really accessible and it doesn't have to be perfect. You just need to be writing things that are real and that express your truth. So that's what my blog is about.
Oh, I can't wait to. I've read a little bit of it and I just love it. But one thing I do love is you're an advocate, not only for just students, but for public education, for teachers. And I've seen some of the work you've done because I actually participated in a few. And
yes.
And it was nice. You do some great workshops and conversations about equity.
Yes.
Which we need. Anti-bias, anti-racist education, which we really need to talk to now about it now, and culturally sustaining pedagogies and literacy in the digital age.
Yes.
That's big. Those are really popular now, and we need to talk about them.
I'm excited about the work because it is ongoing, and it's going to take so many different people in different areas of education to be able to really make some movement in the right direction. But I really enjoy being able to just lend whatever expertise I have to the cause because I am starting to see some really beautiful changes come about as a result of the work that not only I am doing, but what I'm doing in concert with others, because none of us can really be successful doing this in isolation.
Well, it's bigger than us, but it does start with one person though. So we all have to kind of be there for each other.
You're absolutely right.
I'm so glad you're here and we're going to talk about some of these. This is great. But I always like to start having my guests tell about themselves a little bit more, about you, your family, where you grew up, because you have an interesting past.
Thank you. It's interesting because I never really realized when I was growing up that my story would be as strange or exceptional or I guess everybody's stories are unique, but I grew up in Southern California. And when I was a teenager, I moved to Brazil and that changed my life. I had grown up going internationally because my grandmother lived in Bermuda. So I went to go visit my grandmother usually every summer. And I did not realize what a privileged life that was to be able to go and learn how to swim in Bermuda, to go and have a grandma who was Bermudian and who would make me Bermuda cherry jam from the tree just outside of her yard. You know, those were things that it was unique to our family. And sure, I didn't know anybody else who had those specific types of things, like grandmas or knew what Bermuda cherry jam tasted like. I think that I didn't know anyone else, but I just, in the grand scheme of things, I thought, well, I'm sure there are lots of other people who have Bermudian grandmas. But as time has gone on, I find that's actually not the case. So especially folks who have a lot of the other things that I have as well, such as the fact that when I was a teenager, I moved to Brazil, and I was raised by my mother, who is bilingual. She speaks Spanish fluently. So she's taught me Spanish from birth. So when I moved to Brazil, I knew Spanish already, but I knew no Portuguese. So I learned Portuguese from my Brazilian family. And the most interesting thing about going and learning Portuguese from my Brazilian family was that I learned the Portuguese of the streets. So my Portuguese, I can definitely read and write it, but my spoken Portuguese is by far the strong suit that I have. And one of the things that I am really excited about is being able to talk about multiculturalism and multilingualism, because it's such a huge part of who I am. Living and teaching in Denver, we have a lot of multicultural and multilingual students. And then one of the things that I really want to be able to share with people too is that it's really important to ignite kids' passions for books by being able to give them an introduction to books in a lot of different modalities. And then I also want people to understand that, you know, when you are multilingual, you have this whole nother world opened up to you. And that's something that has happened for me. And I want to share that with the children. Because a lot of times we practice, you know, we say that bilingualism and multilingualism is a good thing, but then we punish kids for it because they don't, their languages that they speak are not the right ones. So I really want to help folks have an increased or enhanced appreciation for the bilingual, or in my case, trilingual heart and soul. Portuguese is very much the language of my heart. English is utilitarian for me, and there are some beautiful things written in English, and I like to think that I have some skill with the written English word, but Portuguese is definitely, because I learned to speak it at a really pivotal time in my life, that's kind of what I go to just automatically, what my brain goes to when I want to express something that I'm really passionate about.
Can I ask you, do you write in Portuguese also? Or
I do just poetry. I don't, it's interesting because Spanish for me comes out most naturally as Spanglish. I can speak Spanish with folks like parents. I speak Spanish with a lot of parents in the community. With the students, I usually speak Spanglish, and then I speak Portuguese every day with my Brazilian family. So, and my Brazilian friends as well. So every day I'm going between, you know, three, one might say four languages if you include Spanglish as a variety of Spanish.
Oh, it's just amazing what your brain, I mean, when you, if you can speak, I can't speak too many other languages. I try, but it's not like that. And I just think that your brain is so amazing if we start children younger.
I think I was really lucky. I was really lucky, Barbara, because I went and I mean, my mother gave me that gift of bilingualism, but then I learned that third language at a really pivotal time in my life where I don't know what it's like to only speak one language.
And oh, that's so amazing.
You know, I think that that's something that it does change the way your brain works. There is a lot of science that says that it changes the way that your brain works, but it also just changes the way your heart works too.
Oh yeah, because you touch others' lives because you I mean, you can communicate with them. I can't. I mean, I just love it. And since you have a you said there's it's very multicultural at your schools
it
too.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And so you have that. And you've been teaching language arts since 2005, which has been really good. But the whole thing that you do is that you got me reading when we got in that one workshop where
yes.
we were reading. Yeah, and it changed a little bit of the way I now do professional learning.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, you got me thinking about really getting people to just digest a short paragraph or some idea that has some really deep thought in them so they can reflect on it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been doing a lot more like that since you did that with me, especially the ones that you did. It's really great.
Thank you.
Now, when you were young, before you went to Brazil, you were you in Southern California? Or where
yes.
were you?
Yes. So I grew up in San Diego. And that was also a privileged existence, which I did not realize. I grew up in a little town called Cardiff by the Sea, California, and it's still there. It's beautiful. It looks a little bit different than it did when I was growing up. I had a crew of kids. We call ourselves the Cardiff Kids. We're actually still really close. And I lived at the top of a hill. And when I would walk down the hill and collect all my friends on the way down, and we would cross the train tracks and then just go to the beach. And that was our elementary school was at the bottom of the hill. The bakery was at the bottom of the hill. The arcade was at the bottom of the hill. The library was at the bottom of the hill. So anywhere you wanted to go, I lived at the very top, you know? So it was logical for me to be the one who walked down and collected everyone on the way down. So we are still very close. And, you know, by the time I got to the bottom, there were about six of us. And like I said, we talk on Instagram sometimes, and we have had visions of a Cardiff Kids reunion. We've talked about that, but there's something special about my group of Cardiff Kids, because there were Cardiff Kids before us and after us, but we still have stayed pretty close.
Oh, that's really special. So when you went to school, did you like school? I mean, was it hard for you, or was it because of what I've talked to a few people, sometimes their school experiences was what made them so passionate about wanting to be an educator.
Right. And you know, the crazy thing, school was very easy for me because I was one of those children who knew how to do school. And of course I had pretty brown girl syndrome. So it was the better you do, the quieter you are, the more obedient you are, you internalize all of those things and then you just do that. And then you get rewarded for it with good grades. So I had fantastic grades. And you know, I also had the type of mom who was an intellectual and a librarian. So her thing was get good grades and you can do what you want. You can have all kinds of freedom. You can get trips to various places. You know, she was not skimpy with, or not cheap with giving me rewards. I was very privileged, very spoiled. So, you know, and I have a brother who's a lot older than me. So I was the baby and I just grew up just getting real spoiled. So with that said, the teachers liked me because I was the pretty brown girl who would sit quietly and do what they asked.
Wow. I don't think you're like that now.
No.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Well, it's funny how being compliant, which is what we had to do mm-hmm. when we were younger. I mean, it seems like we really want to give kids voice.
Mm-hmm. We say that anyway. We say that. But then whose voices? Are we only really wanting the voices of the kids who we classify as good?
Hmm.
The ones who learn the way that we want them to? The ones who say the types of things we want to hear?
Well, that's a good question, because that's why we're trying to, you know, I've been in professional development trying to coach teachers to let go. And I worked in Oakland School District, where we had a lot of different cultures and a lot of people that were, like you said, compliant. Trying to get them not to be able to have a voice of their own was really not only the teacher's problem, but it was also the kids' problems.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that we can do a better job about when we're thinking about how school works for kids and how they feel in school is making children, I think that we have a tendency, which is maybe somewhat natural, to reward children who learn the way that we learn, who respond well to us. Everybody likes to be liked. So you're going to want to reward the children who like you rather than finding the ones who maybe come off as they don't like you and figuring out why, or the ones who perhaps, are not really responding to your way of teaching and finding out why. That's something that we really need to incorporate more and not be threatened by, you know? I mean, I think that's something that took a long time for me, because that takes confidence to not be threatened by somebody not responding well to your teaching.
Well, the thing that I'm finding for some teachers is that when they do let go and then their children, whatever age, decides to finally have a voice and they realize that it can be successful that way, it changes them and it changes their teaching practice. Because I know teachers that have let go realize it's a lot more fun when the kids actually have a voice and an opinion and make decisions. But it doesn't always happen that way. It's hard for some, it's hard that first time to do that.
Yes, it is. It is. And I think like it gets easier. And I also think that one of the things I've learned is that when we can say right off the bat, hey, I'm learning too. I'm a learner too. And I'm hoping to learn beside you. And I'm hoping that you'll help me to be the best teacher I can be for you. Yes, I might have a little bit more experience. I might have some knowledge that you don't have of a certain subject area, but that doesn't mean that I know everything. And so we're in this together. My skill set and whatever I've learned is a tool for you. I want to empower you and help you. It's not this, okay, you need to learn what I have and you need to learn it the way that I say, and then you need to show me that you know it the way that I want you to show it. That's just, those power structures just don't work. So we need to just abandon that. And I think that we can, and I know that we will. It's just going to take folks getting a little bit more used to doing things that way and thinking of things that way. But as far as my experience in school, it's always been very easy for me. So it has taken a little bit of a consciousness shift and a mind shift and a heart shift for me to learn to help the children for whom school is not a good fit or a natural fit, and to be there for them in an authentic way, not a cliche. I feel so bad for you. You know, this is so tough. Because I think sometimes we do that. I think people overcompensate and it comes across as very cheesy and fake, and they don't like that either. They want someone to be beside them, not someone who's just, you know, you don't like school, so I'm just going to make it so easy for you. Because usually the ones that don't like school need it to be more challenging. And I don't mean more difficult. I mean like step up to the level of thinking that they're doing. Because a lot of times it is so outside the box and brilliant and amazing. And the confines that we put everything in, the restrictions that we place on the ways people can show their learning in school, that just doesn't work for them because they're already four or five steps beyond.
Wow. How do you do this in your classes? I mean, I know some of the classes are pretty big and you have a variety of kids at different levels. How do you find out when there's someone who's kind of just given up and they'll just do what you tell them? How do you change that?
So I usually address it head on and I say, you don't look happy. I can see that this is not interesting to you. Is this uninteresting because of what we are doing, because of the way we're doing it? Can you think of a better way? Is there some way that we can meet halfway? I'm a big fan in all areas of life of meeting people halfway. I just feel like if we step back for a minute and think of all the times when you could have met someone halfway and how things would have been different, I think that we could really learn a lot from analyzing those experiences.
Well, we need to do that in our lives. I mean, these are life skills. So I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I mean, being around you, I just have to kind of explain this again. I walked in the room, I met you, and the first thing I wanted to do is say, how come we haven't met before? Because I know you. I've known you for years. There's something that you do that makes people feel comfortable, and I'm sure you do that with the kids also.
Well, you know, I do these days, Barbara. I have 1,700 children now as a librarian.
The library.
Yes.
It's,
I have
1,700
students. So I really have such a short amount of time with them in the grand scheme of things. So now it's not 90 minutes every day with the same 60 kids. It's an hour, if I'm lucky, with 1,700 kids who I may, and then I'll have these brief encounters where it's, hey, do you have a book about this? And we just have we have maybe 5 minutes to have this quick conversation that's going to bring us together. So I've really had to make sure that my skill set with making people feel comfortable, removing shame around the types of things that they want to read, because that is real too. We have put things on children like they think that maybe something is too low of a reading level, or maybe reading books in Spanish is not the best, or maybe, you know, we've just made them feel certain types of ways about what they like to read. And I think that that's a mistake. So having all of these students and trying to make them feel like I'm an advocate for them and helping them to understand how much I love them is a challenge. However, I think children respond to nonverbal things a lot. And I always try to tell them, okay, look, we're in it together. And I have a really like frank approach. And I think when I present and when I do workshops around the country, that's something that I really value too. I prefer, I'll be honest, working with children to working with adults. But if I can work with adults who will then work with other adults who will positively impact children, or I can work with adults who are teaching kids and then the kids' lives will be changed, then I'll do it. And so I'm honored to be able to be invited into spaces like the one where we first met, to be able to share some practices that might make a child's life better.
Well, the thing that really exudes is your passion. And I think if we also, I mean, I've had some kids say they really, really like this particular teacher because they're nice to me. They don't teach me. They just smile and they're interested in me. And I think that that's about you. There's something that you do that makes people feel good. And so I'm really like, I feel like I had to reach out with you and even talk about your own passion, because I know you love reading. I know you love books, but there were some other things that you mentioned to me.
Well, you know, what's crazy is that I read a book called Astrology for the Soul. And the craziest thing about it was in print right there in the book. It said, you will be your most fulfilled and at your happiest when you are working with other people, teaching them how to serve children or working with children. And it said something like that in print. I don't have the book in front of me, but when I read that, I was like, wow, because this is what I've been working toward for my whole life. So clearly I have a passion for reading and for books, because that was my escape. That was my solace. That was my joy. When I was growing up, I mean, I was always in a book, always. However, I've also grown into this passion for teaching and passion for working with young people, because they just make me so happy. Young people have so much beautiful energy. I was working with sixth graders for the first time this year, and I was like, what have I been doing for so long? You know, like, sixth graders are where it is. They're so amazing. They're incredible. And I just love them so much. Their energy is so beautiful. And I mean, the beautiful thing, what I'm seeing is that sixth graders are just barely out of elementary school. We put so many resources into elementary school literacy, early education literacy. We have all kinds of people who are interventionists, reading interventionists and all this stuff. Then once the kids get to middle school, we kind of taper off with that, like dramatically. And we assume that the child has a reading identity, a reading life. Then after that happens in high school, we really don't support much at all. And what we do is we give them a bunch of really like intense classics and sometimes really dry reading that does not grab you. And so what happens between 6th and 12th grade is, of course, a natural consequence of that. Someone decides that they don't like reading anymore. So it has become my passion to help folks understand that within everyone is a reader. You just got to find the right book, or the right type of book, or the right author, or the right style, or the right modality. And that lots of different things qualify as reading. You don't just have to have a book and sit down with a 300-page book start to finish for that to qualify as reading. So I'm trying to shape that and help people kind of change their views around what that means. Because I think that we have sort of systemically, number one, gotten rid of libraries and weakened people's abilities to have exposure to libraries and librarians. And then I think that another thing we've done that has been harmful is we level books. So we will put a Lexile level on it or something that will make a child feel like, okay, if I read this book, this is at my level. Well, guess what? Some of these reading tests that are spitting out levels for children, they take and they don't care. Or they'll take it and purposely get a very low level so that the teacher will then only give them very easy things to read. And we need to be really real with ourselves and with kids. I ask them these types of questions. What do you like to read? What is the level that the computer spat out? Do you agree with that level? How did you get that number? How are you feeling about that number? I ask them questions and then listen to them. And children, you know, are a whole lot like adults in the fact that they want respect. They want to be heard. They want to feel seen. It's not that difficult of a formula.
See, one of the things I agree with you about Lexile levels and some of the concerns about that, because of some kids, they get lazy when they're not interested. They'll just do whatever they like, you just like you said. But I was on social media and saw you put up some amazing books that you asked people to help you purchase some books that, which I helped. I donated
Thank
to.
Thank you.
Yes,
Thank you so
I did.
much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But the idea is that you're looking for books in different languages, but you're looking at books that are really stretch their thinking.
Yes.
And do you ask them what they want? And then
all the time. I ask them all the time, what do you want me to have in the library? But then I also have some really great partners over the internet who I've connected with, who help me to know the market and to know some good things to put in front of kids. And then we have this really interesting group of people within the district. Their full-time job is to build library collections based on demographics. So I didn't even know that that was a thing. But if you have a certain demographic with immigrants from 5 different countries, then they know just the right books to have in your collection for that age group and for people from those countries speaking those languages.
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's cool. It's beautiful. And so, you know, some of the things that I personally read, I want in the collection, because then I can say, look, I had a beautiful experience with the poet X. I had a phenomenal experience with, who hasn't had a great experience with, Jason Reynolds books. I can say that Jessamyn Ward, I would recommend all of her books because they're just so beautiful. The emotions they bring out of you and then the craft behind them. Those are perfect for studying craft.
You know, you mentioned that, but I don't know those books. I don't know Jessamyn Ward.
She has my same birthday, so I hope that you will be finding her, because I know your birthday is right around mine. So you need to look up Jessamyn Ward. She is one of us. She is one of our people.
Well, you wrote it down and I said, oh gosh, I love books like that. And
she's so great.
And the whole thing is about, you love reading. Since you love reading, you probably encourage the kids to read, but it's also, how do you get teachers to have that same passion as you?
So a lot of what I do is maybe a little sneaky, but I'll say, you know, okay, we're going to do this unit together. The kids are all going to read this book. Do you want to read it with us? And so I have math teachers who read the book club books with us, and that's amazing. And I love it. And then I'm a firm believer in the power of a good book talk. So you pick the book that you love, and I'm actually going to be doing some of these rapid fire on Saturday during a presentation. So when this podcast will come out after that presentation, but it's going to be saved on YouTube for folks. It's through the Educator Collaborative, so it's free. And I just want people to know, free professional development. It's a thing of beauty. There's going to be so many amazing educators that we can learn from that day. I'll be learning, but then I'll also be teaching. So I'll be doing a little 45-minute session that's about multicultural YA lit renaissance that we have going on right now. And I will be book talking some of my favorite titles. And just giving a little preview of one that's actually not released yet, but that I'm absolutely in love with for style purposes. My English teacher heart just resonates with this one. So I'll be talking about that one. I'll leave that as a surprise. By the time this podcast comes out, the book will not be out, but my PD session will be live on YouTube. You can just search for the Educator Collaborative Fall Gathering, and that's how you can find it.
Okay. Well, I'm writing it down. And what I can do is also help push it out on social media, because I know you're on there.
I am.
Me.
That would be lovely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you know, we did talk about, we don't have a lot of time left, so I want to make sure that we can cover some things. But one of the things that I love is it's about celebrating everybody and celebrating our differences. And you did talk about that when, you know, and so how do you do some of those? How do you do that?
So I think that the most important way that we can celebrate our differences, of course, is through sharing our passions with one another. And I try to live that example. But I also think that we have to make a conscious effort to get past the parts of our brains that make us feel afraid of difference or afraid of things that are unfamiliar. So humans are really interesting and complicated animals in that we get really threatened when we feel like there's a person, place, or situation that is different, that is unfamiliar, that we haven't, you know, come across yet or encountered, and it might be scary to us or put us in danger. So rather, and that's just a life-saving reflex, right? Because you don't want to go running into a dangerous situation and lose your life. So it's natural to have that. However, when we don't have enough experiences with differences, I think we get locked into these safety silos where you just feel most comfortable around people who look like you, reading stories about people who look like you, being in classrooms with kids who look like you. And then it becomes even harder to break out of the safety silo. So I think that folks just need to do a lot more getting out there into the world. I don't have all the answers for how that can happen because I'm very lucky, and I realized this a little bit late in life, that I grew up in a family that valued difference so much that from birth, they were putting me in situations that sort of forced me to experience differences, different foods, people, climate, culture, languages, all of these things. And so when you experience differences like that, you have a lot of an easier time doing it again because it worked out. I can't think of a time really when, I mean, I can think of negative experiences. I was at the rodeo once in Tooele, Utah, and it was not cool and it was not pleasant, but I grew from it. I'm okay. I'm still here. My cousin always says, it didn't kill you. You're still alive. So keep kicking.
They didn't put you on a horse, did they?
They sure did not. No. No, okay. They did tell me how much they loved the Supremes, though, and my people were so fantastic. And this was 2002. Your people are so wonderful. Oh, I love the Supremes and that Magic Johnson. You know, just saying that. And I was like, wow, okay. I don't really know what you want me to say right now, but thank you. I mean, it was very nice and you could laugh about it, but it was super awkward too. Very awkward.
Well, maybe we do need to open doors because I think if you put two people in a room who really gets to know each other and their backgrounds are so different and they realize there's this humanity here that we have a lot of similarities and that if we give them those opportunities, because a lot of people don't have the same opportunities that you had growing up.
And they don't. And I think though also you have to look at what's around you and go after the opportunities that are around you. Like who goes to the Mexican market near them to go and get homemade tamales? Who goes and does that? Folks who know that they're there, folks who aren't scared to be in a market where you don't speak the language, folks who are maybe a little braver, bolder, more adventurous, and maybe folks who are looking for a little bit more authentic cultural experience. So there are experiences and people all around you that will, you don't have to travel halfway around the world like I did. You can take those experiences just as they are, you know, close by.
Well, I live in Oakland and I love it because it's very multicultural. And I was a sixth grade teacher, by the way.
Yay! I love sixth grade so much.
I know. I loved it too. And I loved my kids and the kids that were there. But many of them shared experiences I never had. I was privileged and I'm white. And I, you know, I grew up in a middle class family and I had no idea what it was like living in some of the homes they lived in, which many times were broken homes or not even raised by their own parents. Or they, I mean, a few kids even told me they had to sleep in the bathtub to be safe. And I had no idea. And I think it's a matter of opening up that door and having some time to really build the relationships so they feel safe that they can tell you anything. Because, you know, I had to pull this out of a lot of the kids because they didn't know if they could trust me.
And there's that delicate balance, right, of not making them feel like they owe you their story or not making them feel like they have to tell you intimate details in order to have a relationship or to begin to establish a relationship. But I'm also one of those people who has layers to my life that people maybe wouldn't always guess. So when it comes time for me to share something that's a little bit more difficult to talk about, I never hesitate when it's a child. I never hesitate because I haven't ever had a bad experience where I've told them something that maybe an adult would be shocked by and have a negative reaction to. The child is usually like, wow, okay, miss, like you understand, you do really understand because you've been through some things. And so I don't always share all of the things that have happened in my life that have been, some of them, you know, you could call them traumatic, but, you know, I readily share that my father passed away when I was in high school because I've had many students who have had parents that have passed away. And that is a life-defining event, let me tell you.
Oh, I can't imagine.
You just never forget.
Yeah.
So being able to share those types of things with your kids, and being able to connect with the kids who've had something similar happen, I think that that's really important.
It's hard because we are so guarded. We don't want to be vulnerable, but the kids really want that. They feel like if you're human, you make mistakes and maybe it's okay. You can model it for them. And, that was tough. I'm like that, like you. I tell the stories and I'm doing a whole thing. Actually, I'm doing presentations on stories now because stories really matter to me. And that's why I have a podcast, because I found that everyone has a story. Some have multiple stories. And I've even had people say, I've never told anyone this before. And I went, really? I'm putting this up on the internet.
Wow.
Are you sure you want to tell? But what's cool is that if you feel that this is the time I need to reveal, you want to feel in a safe place, but just imagine your kids. They probably have a lot of secrets and they don't get that safe place. So I'm glad that, I mean, they're so lucky to have you there.
Thank you. Really great. I feel lucky to be here. I was just telling one of my coworkers today that folks need to really understand, especially in some school environments where, you know, maybe you don't have all the resources that you should, or you don't have the administrative support or consistency that you should. You know, it's still a privilege to be able to work with children, and it's a privilege for them to trust you enough to learn from you. So it's really important for people to not take that for granted.
Well, I'm going to have to end it on that because that was the quote I'm going to use. It's so beautiful.
Oh,
Julia,
I'm glad it's
you're just amazing.
Out.
Just amazing.
Thanks, Barbara.
This has been really, I could talk to you probably all day long.
Same.
But so we'll definitely get together again. But thank you so much. We'll be putting this up with all that information from you and some pictures. Especially the picture of you and I. That was a fun picture.
It was. It was just a great day. I mean, the donut wall, for me, that just kicked it all off, you know?
I have a picture of that. Maybe I should put that up, too.
It was so great. You're going to start with a donut wall? I mean, that's winning from the get-go in my book. I know.
Well, this was, I have to say, it was at Five Sigma.
Yes.
At Anastasis Academy and,
yes.
And outside of Denver with Kelly and, I forgot. Yeah. No.
Yes. Yeah, Kelly Tenkelly. Yep, cool.
Yeah, I got to make sure I say it right. It was wonderful, wonderful people, and I got to meet you. So thank you so much for this time today. This was
wonderful. Of course. It was my pleasure, and I really appreciate you and your energy and just the willingness that you have to capture people's stories, because I do agree with you that that's important. And I would be happy to share my story with whomever you think would want to hear it. And I'm hoping that I get to see you in the not too distant future, because our paths seem to cross at these conferences quite a bit.
Oh, so we better do it. We better do it.
Hopefully we'll see each other sooner rather than later.
Well, thank you so much.
And you're welcome.
And we'll definitely get together.
Sounds great. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Julia Torres. Look for a complimentary blog post about Julia and where we pull together resources, links, and some fun pictures for you. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a review. You can also subscribe to my website at barbarabray.net, and that way you receive announcements and updates so you don't miss any of the conversations.